Welcome to Breaking Down the Buzz, the podcast where we explore the thrilling world of tech industry leaders. From AI to the latest trends, we cut through the noise and decode the tech buzz and share our collective insights and insider knowledge. In this episode of Breaking Down the Buzz, I'm excited to welcome Lori Jennings, the founder of Jennings Pro Search. Lori is not only a good friend, but also a valued member of my tech lady tribe. Jennings Pro Search is an exceptional firm dedicated to finding transformational tech leaders who can anticipate and drive business needs forward. Join me as we delve into Lori's insights on the current job market, the impact of AI on recruiting, and tips for those looking to advance their tech careers. Excited to have you join us, Lori.
Well, Lori, thank you for joining us. I'm super excited to have you here. Welcome to Breaking Down the Buzz.
Thank you, Ro. I'm excited to be here. I've seen your program, and I was honored that you asked me.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't skip you. You're legendary here in Richmond.
Stop.
For sure. So tell us, for those of you who don't know Lori, and there most people know Lori, but for those of you who don't know you, tell us about you and your background and how you came to be doing what you're doing.
Well, I'm Lori Jennings. I am an executive recruiter. I own a company called Jennings Pro Search. It's just me. I'm a boutique firm that focuses mostly on placing senior technical to executive levels in the mid-market. So I'm not after big companies like the Cap Ones and stuff around here. So that's what I do now. And I got into IT back in the late 90s after selling commercial carpet to American Online and falling in love with all the buzz that was going on there. Right. Decided I want to be in the industry and started out selling some hardware for EMC and Cisco before moving to a database consulting firm that turned into a staffing firm because of the economy. Got my MBA, wanted to own my own business and really got excited about executive recruiting because some of my clients were always asking me to look out for jobs for them when they were looking. And I'd be out there as a salesperson. I knew about opportunities. I'd introduce them and they'd get jobs. I'm like, I really like this. And I've always been a matchmaker.
Right.
And a connector in my personal life. That's just who I am. So it's just aligned very well. And that's what I've been doing for the last 15 years.
Yeah. Well, you're definitely a people person. So I can see that lined up. We know each other pretty well.
Yep.
For sure. So you started Jennings Pro Search in a time when the economy was pretty tough.
Yep.
And that was sort of a slump in the IT world. Tell me about that and how that went.
Well, that was in 2008.
Okay.
And that's when we had three companies here in Richmond go out of business all at once. That big recession, you know, we had Circuit City, Land America, and is it Kimunda? The chip place.
Yeah.
They all went out of business, you know, laying off maybe 800, 900 people in IT each. And so it was a tough time to get started. And I was scared, but what it really gave me the opportunity to do was meet with a lot of people. Because when everybody's busy working and things are crazy, they don't have time to meet with you. So I had executives and different people that were reaching out to me to talk. And it was a good time to form different relationships. You know, it didn't feel good at the time.
Right.
That's also when we really got going with the Women in Technology group, which was kind of when you and I got to know each other.
Yeah.
And there was a wonderful group of women that formed to try to support one another through this. And that blossomed into what our tribe is today of some great women. So I think it was a good time because it made me really work with my foundation and do the right things.
Right.
And then when we came out of it, I came out of it pretty strong.
Yeah. I tell people all the time, so Synergy's coming around on 14 years, I think, now. And we don't have any external investors and we've never borrowed money to fund the business. And it's sort of a similar situation in that I tell people that if you don't have external investors and you don't borrow money, you need to figure out how to make the business viable with just what you have. And it feels to me like launching when you did, when it was so hard to even find those roles to put people into, mm-hmm. that it forced you to really build a viable business.
Yep.
You know, and I think create connections. I mean, I think some of those people you still work with.
I do. Yeah. And if it had been a great economy, I'd have been too busy to focus, you know, on making sure it was viable long term.
Yeah. Well, and I could easily see you having stayed selling other things because, you know, back in 2007, 2006, really, the IT world was booming. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, you could basically, in my world, just say ERP and you would get a job, you know? So,
yep.
So for me, it feels like, while that was a really tough time to go through, it certainly set you up for where you are now.
Yeah. You know? And it set me up for what's going on in our economy right now, which is, feels different, way different than that.
That's so weird.
But it's still not a great economy for a recruiter,
yeah,
and for a lot of people in tech that are out looking for work. It's,
yeah,
the weirdest, you know, because back then, I mean, everything was crashing. The banking, you know, there was a lot of stuff going on. And now all the indicators, there's a lot of positive indicators, yet people in tech are feeling
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's a weird space. And I'll tell you that what we're seeing is that things are slower. So our customers are talking about projects and they're, mm-hmm, they're planning projects, but they're not necessarily moving forward with them. They just want to, mm-hmm, understand what they're going to cost. And it can take a lot longer to close something. So, you know, a transaction or a sale that would normally take us maybe 4 to 6 weeks to close could take 6 months.
Yep.
Really, really easily. And it feels like it's not anything other than people are just kind of buckling up and waiting to see what happens.
Yep.
And are you seeing that?
Oh, that's yeah. Everybody's the same thing. And I'm talking to a lot of people. Consulting firms are saying the same thing with project work.
Right.
My competitors and people that do what I do outside of tech, they're saying things are slow, definitely a lot slower. I mean, there's some pockets of hiring. You know, and my clients are saying, well, when we lose somebody, we're just not backfilling them right now. We're still doing well.
Right.
But they're just waiting it out because there's so much uncertainty out there with everything that's going on globally, with going on with the election and with interest rates and people, if you read, you know, the stock market could be the worst crash we've ever had since the Great Depression. So, you know,
right,
these things scare people and make us just like, well, they've done a lot of hiring and a lot of projects the last few years. They could probably make it through. And I feel like that's what they're doing, just waiting and seeing. And they're ready to go. I think we'll come out of it, you know,
yeah,
hopefully at the end of this year or whenever they start to drop interest rates, but we never know.
Yeah. We're starting to see indicators that things are starting to move forward. I suspect, don't know, but I suspect that we'll see a real pause November, December, and then probably January, February.
Mm-hmm.
But historically, project work, there's two things that happen in IT. Either you've got a year-end deadline, and so everything gets crammed in,
mm-hmm,
and has to be done by the end of the year, or everybody says, we're going to be on vacation, it's holidays, we're not going to work on anything. So we either get it's got to be done by Christmas, or nope, we're not going to touch it till we get back from,
yep,
the holidays. And I would suspect that hiring is a very, very similar scenario.
Yeah, and everybody that's interviewing, you know, that I'm keeping up with friends that are looking,
right,
and they're saying, I'm having some great interviews, and people are talking about hiring, but they just don't have an open role, or they're not given the green light to go ahead.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And then another thing I see that's happened over the last year is some pressure to go offshore. And I think that was because of the wage inflation with developers and the lack of availability for the senior talent that,
right,
we needed. So that forced people to look at other options. And they found some alternatives, not just in India now, but down in South America, down in Mexico, down similar time zones, which made it a little bit easier. And,
right,
they're getting some really good quality work. So I've seen that in some of the software development type, you know, consulting roles.
Have you seen that, you know, there was a period of time probably up until 18 months ago or so that IT people were really, really hard to find. Technologists were,
mm-hmm,
really, really hard to find. And so they were almost choosing their own salaries. And so these salaries, mm-hmm, got sort of artificially inflated.
Mm-hmm.
Are you seeing that because of that, these roles are moving offshore? Or do you think it's just there's more talent available, or...
I think it's a combination of both. You know, anytime it scares me when I see wage inflation, because this is what I saw in 2008 or 2007,
right,
when we had so many projects, lack of talent, driving the wages up, because it's not sustainable long term. And when I was seeing people, I mean, developers were asking for $225,000 to $250,000. Just these are not leads. These aren't even managers. These are just developers, senior developers. And how are you going to pass that on? I mean, before they might have,
right,
been 125 to 150.
Right.
So when that starts to happen, I'm like, this is not sustainable. And that's,
right,
what started to happen. You know, people overhired. They had all these projects to do. We saw, you know, Amazon and Silicon Valley was coming into Richmond and picking our people and giving a, you know, obscene raises. And Cap One was having, you know, Cap One, who's usually the highest paying in town, had to raise their salaries, which meant everybody else had to raise their salaries to even try to compete. Yeah. I mean, it was just crazy. And so anytime that's going to happen, people are going to look for alternatives.
Right.
And I think the people that got laid off, a lot of them were some of that really, really overinflated, you know, wages. Some of the people were people that were hired that came in the industry that maybe weren't a senior.
Right.
That, you know, those type of things happen. And I think what I'm hearing from everybody, and this is internal people, you know, companies and consulting firms, is that the pressure for offshore has become really high to compete. I mean, some companies have said they've gotten rid of all their developers locally or in the U.S.
Right.
And offshored them, you know, with some maybe key people here, leadership folks or architects.
I mean, I can tell you from the consulting world side, there's certainly a lot more pressure now to have lower consulting rates. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of cases, the only way that you can do that is to offshore because you can't pay a good technical resource nothing in Richmond, Virginia.
Right.
You know, you just can't. And that's not to say that we pay good technical resources nothing when they sit in India, because we do have resources in India. But it's a viable wage where they live.
Right.
You know? So it's definitely, it's this weird mix of stuff that's happening. Pivoting just a little bit, what roles are you seeing that are hot right now that are definitely being filled? Like if you were...
Well, AI, of course, that's all we're hearing about. So AI,
yes.
I mean, in fact, and not all data, because we're seeing data folks being laid off.
Right.
I don't know. I can't remember the company, but it was a pretty big company that just announced they were laying off 1,800 data folks and then hiring in another 1,800 with specific AI skills. And these are people with research, PhDs, you know, to figure out this type of thing.
Right.
We've seen Cap One here is hiring a lot of AI roles. So AI, machine learning, data analytics, data governance is really hot, because in order to do AI and everything, you have to have
Absolutely.
Really good data.
Yeah,
data governance. And so we're seeing that. And then along with that, of course, is cybersecurity, because you're going to need that. And then data privacy with all of this that's going on. And I think cybersecurity is also hot because, well, we've seen some big hacks and some things.
Right.
And I think what I'm hearing a lot now is that the hackers, the ones, the unethical ones, they're using AI at machine speed, right?
Absolutely.
To do this. We're all seeing it in our inbox. You're seeing a proliferation of so many phishing attacks and everything else. Well, in order to keep up with that, cybersecurity's got to start using AI. And so there's that, this interesting skill set of how AI and cybersecurity are coming together to kind of, fight that off. So that's a really big area. And then I don't see this, because in Richmond, we don't see it a lot, but I know blockchain's a big one. You know, you're going to have quantum computing and all those type of things I hear are very hot out there. I just don't see that in my
perspective. Right.
Yeah.
Now, is your practice primarily Virginia-based, or do you recruit?
Well, a lot of my companies have some tie to Virginia, but sometimes it's people that have been here that are working for companies. So it's really all over the country, more on the East Coast, Texas sometimes, where we can hire remote type folks.
Right.
I mean, a lot of the candidates I place do not live in Richmond. There's still a lot of remote roles. And then anything with the tie to Richmond, or people that have been here that have moved.
Right.
But I'm out there actively going out looking for work elsewhere.
Right. That actually pivots me to a different question. And that is, are you seeing in-person coming back more? And is that a request that you see more, or are you still seeing...
No, still seeing a lot more hybrid requests, which means you kind of have to be local.
Right.
But not 100%, you know.
Yeah.
Cap One, everybody dictates, you know, they follow what Cap One does here in Richmond, and they've, a 2 to 3 day hybrid on site.
Yeah.
So I see a lot of that going on. But when there's a difficult skill set, like a really hard niche skill set, I'm watching companies, especially in the development heads down type roles, some companies are still very willing to do, you know, a remote role, as long as they'll come on once in a while, maybe once a quarter to be part of that culture. Because I think they've found that if they don't have some tie back, it's hard to keep them.
It's much harder.
Yeah. When they come on site, they feel part of a team, you know, they get to know the people, they bond with them. And then so when they're away, they feel like they know what's going on when they're in that little cute, you know, video.
Right.
Window.
Right. Yeah. Pivoting back to AI a little bit, what are you seeing in the recruiting world around AI? And I'm going to caveat this. So what we're starting to see, we have positions posted all the time. What we're starting to see are what really feel like AI generated resumes.
Mm-hmm.
Are you seeing that?
Oh, yeah. Tons of them.
And like, does that immediately set off a flag for you? How do you know?
Well, when I first started seeing it, you know, when you post a job, you get 200 to 500 people within a week. So most of which did not look good, did not match. So
Right. Of
course these AI generators were wonderful. You're like, oh my God, you were so excited when you saw this perfect resume. But once you started to get behind the cover, you know, and you started
Right. Talking
to the people when they're that good, perfect, there's a problem,
Yeah. You know?
And I started to realize that, yeah, that you get them on the phone and you could tell this, they did not write this resume at all. So now I can kind of see through it. And, you know, the way is you don't see examples. You just see kind of generic stuff with
Right. Not
a lot of detail, a lot of personal examples. And I think I recommend to everybody, I see this too with human written resumes too. And I think I try to tell people, look, you've got to give examples. You've got to talk about, quantify your results,
Right. All
of that. You can't just any longer list your roles and responsibilities. Like I gathered requirements. I did something in SQL. You've got to really, because anybody can look that
Right. Up
and cut and paste that off the internet. I want to see, how did you use the SQL? What was the project?
Right.
What was the result of that? Whatever, you know? And so I think now that's what we're really looking for. And when it's too flawless, you know, they all kind of look alike.
Yeah.
You kind of know it's a red flag. And in addition to this is the scary stuff that's happening, is people are using AI when you get them on interviews. There's like earbuds. And I've heard about this from Steve. I talked to a guy last week, a hiring manager in data, and he caught somebody with a hearing piece in the ear, and somebody was feeding in the answers as this person was being interviewed.
Really?
Then I've heard about people like lip syncing and doing some specific, you know, some things. So I found a person who I haven't seen that. Maybe somebody's done it to me and I didn't notice. I doubt it. But what I had happen is I had somebody apply. I interviewed this person, told him, you know, his communication was not there. This was an AI generated
Right. Resume.
And when I got him on the phone, his English communication was very difficult. He didn't understand what I was asking. I couldn't understand what he was saying. I told him, thank you, but this is not going to be a fit. And soon after, I got another resume that it changed a little bit, same area, and got him on the video call. And it was the same guy, but he changed his room scene. He put on some glasses, tried to make himself look very different. But, you know, when he started talking, I immediately knew it was him. I called him out on it and he hung up on me. So I see I did see that personally.
Wow.
So I think there's a, you know.
And
there's AI generated profiles out there too.
Yeah. I have so many questions about this. So what's to be gained by doing that? Like, so say this odd person who's done this lands the job. Number one, how are they going to do the job? And number two, if you're changing your name, it feels to me like how are you going to get paid?
I don't know about that part. Yeah. I really don't know that answer.
Wow.
But we saw this in 2007, right before that big, you know, recession. Same thing, but we didn't have videos back then. You would just phone screen people.
Right.
And there would be one person that would do all the interviews and then they'd send somebody else. And I would get calls because I was doing staffing at the time. They're like, you need to come pick up this person because they are not the person who interviewed. They can't do any of the work. I'd have to pick them up. It was within a week. And, you know,
Wow. They'd
lose their job. And this was in staffing. But what I hear is that some of these large companies, you know, you'd be surprised at how you can get away with it for a little while at least. Short term, sometimes it works. But I don't, especially when you're remote, there's a lot of remote work.
You know, and I wonder, and I don't want to create a situation at all, but what I wonder, you know, immediately I go to, okay, why would somebody be doing that? Is it some sort of phishing where maybe they get hired and they get one paycheck, but if you know, maybe it's some sort of hacking
Yeah. Something,
they get one paycheck, but if you do that 200 times, and you're successful, you know, maybe 25% of the time, that could be a really great way to just steal money. You know you're going to get fired. You know you're going to get...
Yeah, and that could be true, too. I haven't thought about that, but you're right.
I wonder if it's something
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, they're getting more and more sophisticated. This would not surprise me if that were the case.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we certainly have seen, and I know people that have experienced this, where phishing has happened with applicants, where they have been offered jobs and asked to provide their credentials and banking information and whatnot. And, you know, it's really just a phishing scheme. It never occurred to me that that would go the other way, though. You know, that's really interesting.
I think we're going to see so many odd things we've never seen before with AI.
Well, just the deep fakes alone, you know, and you think about, okay, now we're virtually interviewing somebody. It's not a person sitting in front of us. It's they're behind a computer screen, and we know that deepfake technology can fake out being somebody. So now, are you actually faking out being, you know, say somebody's faking out being me going and interviewing for a role?
Yeah,
that could easily happen.
That could easily happen too.
Interesting. Wow.
I'm seeing it on Facebook. I mean, you see all the time you get requests from people that look like your friends, but we know they're not.
Yeah,
There's so many of that. There's so much going on social media right now. Yeah. I know they're little bots.
Yes, yes. Well, it's only going to get worse over the next 100 days.
Yeah, and there's a lot of fake saint profiles out there on LinkedIn. We see it. We're talking about it. Everybody's always talking about it in the feeds.
Right. So how do you think then that AI is changing the recruiting industry in general? Like, you know, you're a one woman shop, but certainly there are firms that have multiple individuals. Are they using AI to screen?
Well, you know, I am hearing things, but I'm personally not doing it. I think the larger companies, especially high volume staffing companies, where you're competing against each other, when, you know, they give you the requirements through a vendor list, it shoots it out at one time, and you're competing really fast to get the best candidates. I think in those cases, AI is going to help screen through resumes, and they may be doing some of that now. I'm not sure. I know there's a lot of people that think the ATS rules them out. You know, but I see people from Google and other large companies saying that's not the case. They're not using AI to weed through. But I think it is happening someplace, and I think it's going to get better, and they're going to continue to do it. So I think that's going to help. They're trying to do it on LinkedIn, and it's always popping up in my LinkedIn recruiter license, but it's terrible right now. So they'll make suggestions of profiles that would match, you know, when I put in some search strings.
Okay.
And they're terrible. Most of the time, they're not. But again, I'm not recruiting for those hard skill, like a Java developer or something that's really easy with search strings. Mine are a little more ambiguous with leadership type roles. So I think it's harder for that, you know, to work right now for those type of roles. But it's definitely happening in that, making it faster, more efficient, all of that.
Yeah. We're definitely seeing it on Indeed, where if we post a job on Indeed, it'll first of all send you suggested candidates. But the other thing that it'll do is it'll serve up different resumes, and you can say, yes, this meets the criteria, no, it doesn't, here's why it doesn't. And I think what that's doing is teaching the algorithm to what you would be looking for. I would say in the ones that have been presented to me to review, they're
still not good.
There.
That's what I'm seeing. They're not there, but they're training it, and it'll get better and better.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how human beings learn to game that system, because we learn to game systems, and you know, people are going to learn what those algorithms are looking for and how to make sure that their resume pops up, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it certainly could happen for sure. Pivoting again, so there's a lot of folks, we use the term on the bench because we're in consulting, there's a lot of folks on the bench. What would you suggest to people to do, you know, other than applying for 300 jobs to really land something? Like what's working?
I think what's working are people that aren't just applying to 300, 500 jobs, and that's certainly happening, and people are getting frustrated and wondering why it's not working. Well, I think they need to focus. They need to have a sales plan, you know, a marketing plan for finding a job. So really think about that.
Okay.
And I'm telling people that I'm talking to, you really need to think about what you're best at. What are you better than other people at? And you got to focus on, and what is hot right now? Because right. You could be good at something that nobody's hiring for, and that's not going right. to help you. So I try to help people when I, you know, consult with them, say, well, this is really hot, this AI here or whatever. You need to really, really focus on this and finding jobs in this area. But whatever it is, apply to jobs that meet 95 to 100% of the requirements, because that's what it's going to take right now. And sometimes even that's not enough, because there's people that meet the preferred, the industry. It's getting very, very tough. You know, the expectations are so high now, and there's so many candidates that you can't get away with 70, 80% of meeting the requirements anymore. You really do have to have that. So focus on those roles where you do meet that, mm-hmm. and then you've got to network. You got to go out there, use your Rolodex, is what we used to say.
Right.
Call everybody you've worked with, people that know you,
right.
that can help, you know, tell you about jobs, that can help not only forge your resume to a recruiter. That's great. But they're really going to be able to tell your story for you and advocate right. for you, because that's what it's going to take right now. When you're getting, I mean, we're getting 300-500 resumes, and a lot of them look very much alike.
Yeah.
How are you going to stand out? Another thing I'm telling people, and we've known this, and it's getting busier and busier and harder to stand out, but it's on LinkedIn or whatever. It's doing podcasts like this.
Content.
It's content. It's getting out there and creating content, yeah. having a voice, going out and maybe speaking at conferences, wherever it is. Because people are, in addition to looking for technical skills in IT, I think people really want good storytellers. They want good right. communicators. I don't care how technical the role is, you still want that.
Right.
And the people that can get out there and do that, they're the ones that people are drawn to. And it's also a way that we know it's you. With all the AI in the background, when I go onto a LinkedIn profile, and I look at LinkedIn profiles before resumes a lot of time when people apply, mm-hmm. I want to see what's going on. And if you have nothing on your LinkedIn profile, that sends up a red flag. That's yeah. not mean I'm going to stop and not look at your resume. But if you have a great one, you know, with some saved areas, you know, your featured areas where maybe it shows you speaking or
okay.
talking,
okay.
then I'm going to be able to tell a lot more about you
right.
than I am just by looking at your resume.
Right.
And I'm going to want to know you. If you have a good, real written about section on LinkedIn that's personal and talks about your passions and why you're doing this, and I'm like, yeah, I feel like I know that person. That person aligns with what, you know, yeah. this role is and this culture I'm trying to match.
And you're sharing good content.
Yes.
Interesting articles, and we can look at it and know what you're about.
Yes.
You know,
and I think that's important. People want to know what you're about,
yeah.
because if it's just a blank piece of paper in the world of AI, where we know, you know,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
just, it's harder and harder yeah. to make sure you're going to be picked. And a lot of times what I'm hearing and what I've seen is people will post a job and they'll get bombarded the first day and they'll take it down. So if you didn't apply the first day, you don't even
Yes.
You don't even get in there.
Yes.
So there's
yes.
just some networking and hearing and
yeah.
being seen is really important right now.
Yeah. And I will tell you that the people that are the most successful with us are people that were referrals.
Yes.
It is a very, very rare thing that somebody applies for a job. And I mean, it happens certainly. And we hire them when no one in the entire company knows them. That's pretty rare. What's more likely is someone will come to us and say, hey, I know you're looking for this role. I've got XYZ person that I think would be a really great fit. And then you've at least got something to go on. And I think if we were to look at our entire organization, there's probably less than a dozen that we didn't hire that way.
Right. You but know? When I see, I follow some internal recruiters for the big companies, you know, and they say they hire 50 to 70% of their people from online applications.
Really?
Now, keep in mind, they have this big brand, right?
Yeah.
If you're a Google or something, all the
yeah.
best people are going to apply.
Right.
So, whereas if it's me posting, I'm not going to have those people looking me up
right.
applying. So they say that, yeah. And they do a lot of referrals. That's another way.
Right.
But I think some of them do. So you really do have to have that resume optimized. It has to speak to the position. And then when you get on the interview, you've really got to be personable. You got to show up prepared. This is another thing that I see people blow it. they spray and put all these out there. Then you get them, say you want to interview them. They can't even remember what role it's for. When you ask them, why are you interested in this role? Why'd you apply? They're like, sometimes they don't even remember what it is. They haven't even got the job description in front of them. And then they'll say, well, it meets my requirement. You know, it's what I do. It's a Java developer role or whatever it is.
Right.
You got to have more than that.
Right.
People want to be wanted right now. And if you've got all these people, you've got to figure out, you've got to read and glean something from their, whatever you've read about them. Maybe it's their mission or it's what they're trying to do with technology, their forward thinking or whatever it may be. You better have a good reason.
Yeah. Know something about the company.
Know something about them and show up prepared to ask good questions. Not a question of how much am I going to get paid? Yes, that's important. And I think you should screen that through your recruiter always up front. But not only when you're with that hiring manager, the last thing you want to do is start asking that or how much time off am I going to have or is this remote? How many days? Those are not the questions you should be asking on your first interview.
Right,
you know, that should be something you've worked out with your recruiter. You understand that. And then you should be very curious about their business, how this role is going to solve problems for them, you know, those type of things.
What kind of business value can I
add?
How would I do that?
Those things right there. You'd be surprised at how few people show up like that. Really prepared. You stand out if you do that, or if you will, if you communicate in writing. I like to pre-screen people in writing. And if I just get so many people, hey, I want to talk to you, I'll ask about, I just want to confirm you're okay with this location, this salary, all the things. I'm very transparent because I don't want to waste anyone's time or
my
time.
Right.
And when they go, yeah, that works for me, or there's very few, there's not a lot of engagement, that's really a turnoff to me.
Right.
You know? So those are just being engaged, asking questions, being curious. Yes, I think those really stand out.
Yeah. And IT people are not known for that necessarily. Mm-hmm. They're known for being curious. That's true. But there's a lot of IT folks that are not super engaged or not super outgoing. And I think you just have to force yourself to do
You really do.
And we tell that to our consultants. You know, we have lots of consultants.
Oh, yeah, consultants, you definitely have to be.
Yeah, and it is contrary to the nature of a lot of our consultants, but you have to be.
You do. Storytelling is key and being able to sell that business value right now.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you for coming in. And I'm super excited to have you here. And I could chat with you all day.
I know. I can't believe the time has flown. We're done?
Yeah. We would need a glass of wine to keep going.
That's right. We should have done this over happy hour.
I know. I don't know why we didn't think of that. Awesome. Well, thank you for coming in.
You're welcome.
All right.
All right.